Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done.
Hi everyone, my name is Dr. Michael Walden. Thank you so much for joining me today on this very exciting topic of everything about aging. Why we age, can we affect our aging process, how exactly do we do that, what's the point of all of it, and what practical tools, what investigations, what testing, what ways of living and lifestyle could actually help us live longer. And some of you are saying, well, I'm not so interested in living longer. I want to live better. Well, I say, let's do both. Why not live longer and better at the same time? I mean, I can't speak for everyone out there, but I try to define goals in my life as clearly as possible. And I've got them in my mind's eye, and I visualize them in as much detail as I can. You know, when I was in my teens, maybe 16 to 18, I spent a lot of time thinking about fitness and also nutrition, because my father, being a chiropractor and nutritionist, he had been a very frequent guest on the Colton Fredericks show way back when on WOR. Some of you out there remember that wonderful nutritionist, Colton Fredericks. And at the time, I was very much interested in applying these concepts in my life. I had the innate sense. First of all, it was just fascinating to me, nutrition and science and fitness. So I visualized myself at age 50 when I was in my teens. And I said, what do I want to be like then? So I visualized it. I thought of how I felt. I wanted energy. I wanted clarity. I wanted a quick mind. I wanted to be able to learn new material quickly and well. I wanted to retain that information and have a good memory. I wanted abundant energy. I wanted to physically look good, sure, but I was cognizant enough of the time to realize that physical looks are not the whole package. We want the physiology of the body working on a very, very high and efficient level. So I made dietary changes. I took certain nutritional supplements. I had certain tests and procedures done over the course of time, and then I adjusted what I did over time. And for those of you who are interested in how I managed all that at age 50, you can see a picture of me when I was 48, actually, on the website, I think under the About Practitioners section. And believe it or not, folks, it is a muscle shot, but I was trying to prove a point here of what an older person, and some of you out there that are older than 50 are saying, you're not so old. I get that. It's all relative. But, you know, at age 50, I run marathons. I lift weights. I wrestle. I have no limitations. I can do now what I could do at any other point in my life. I am faster now. I am stronger now. And my biochemistry, I would say, looks very much unlike an average 50-year-old. You know, for those of you who listened to my very first radio show on PRN, which had to do with the nutritional and medical interpretation of blood, you learned that when a doctor says to you, well, I'm sorry that you can't remember anything and you're weak and your joints hurt and you might have these particular health problems, but you know, your chemistry, your blood work looks fine, so what do you expect? You're getting older, and we can give you medications that might mitigate your symptoms. Well, the problem with that is if the doctor isn't doing the appropriate tests, then he or she misses things. Now, in the area of aging, or reversing or slowing or somehow mitigating in a positive way the effects of our biologic aging, you are at the very same time, I would propose, reducing your future disease risk, reducing your propensity for developing one or more of the major health problems such as diabetes or prediabetes or elevated blood fats or lipids, cancer, autoimmune disease, osteoporosis, and other inflammatory and immune-related issues. So the concept today takes some of the concepts from the first radio show about nutritional interpretation of blood work, and it applies the concept of specific sorts of tests and evaluations that tend to measure more or less our biological aging. But before we can get into that, we need to talk about this whole aging process to begin with. There are several theories of how we age, and I'll be discussing the major ones today. Keep in mind, and I'll repeat this throughout the show, that there is the telomere shortening theory of aging, and there is the antioxidant theory of aging. There's also the theory of hormone decline, and as we age and our hormones decline, our tissues are in more and more disrepair. The degenerative aging process exceeds the reparative capacity of the body. So that's the key statement right there. When I'm sitting with a person in front of me who has sought me out to help with their health concerns, they say, how is it that I take a bag of supplements, I juice every day, I watch my diet, how can I get these problems? Well, number one, we are human beings, and we have to die of something sometime. But I do fully admit that most of us have lost quality of life and also length of life because our degenerative process, as I've just said, is exceeding our reparative process. Now, the degenerative process and reparative process involves those aging theories I just mentioned, and there are several others. But the three major ones I just mentioned, telomere theory, antioxidant theory, hormone decline theory, just to name three of several, they're not separate concepts. They don't occur separately in the body. Scientists try to explain things by compartmentalizing these concepts and then arguing which one is more important than the other. Well, a holistic mindset like myself pays very little attention to those sorts of useless arguments. I approach a person from a holistic perspective, which means I look at multiple areas of physiology, multiple areas of lifestyle. And when it comes to trying to manage the aging process most effectively, we have to consider, of course, mitigating factors like the environment, our exposure to pollutants, our exposure to emotional stress, physical stress, cold, exercise, medications, genetics, and the interplay of all these factors upon your body. Has your body cope or not cope to different extents? If you cope not so well, then you'll have degenerative changes that would promote or result from low hormones or hormone changing, oxidative stress, which would cause the telomere, which is a sort of a tail on the end of a chromosome, to shorten. The more short it gets, the telomere, they say the shorter the length of life. If we can slow down or even slightly improve the length of the telomere, that seems to be associated with a longer lifespan. And I should mention now, though, that I think this the telomere concept is interesting. It does have validity on many levels, but I'm not sure how much practical application that has to your life. I mean, to do telomere testing that tells you, yeah, your telomere is a little shorter than it should be, doesn't tell you a whole bunch to do. Some of the reports I've seen from laboratories will say, well, take zinc and beta-carotene and vitamin C and resveratrol as a few examples of nutrients that have been shown potentially to favorably affect the length of the telomere. But that doesn't mean if you take those things, you're going to affect your telomeres. You're not just a telomere. And by the time a telomere is affected, your body and your foods and your nutrients and all of these factors that we just talked about in brief that are exposed to our bodies, and then they interplay on our tissues, then eventually it may have and will have some effect on that telomere. But to just take the nutrients you read in a magazine that says these are the nutrients, well, if you're a petri dish and there was a cell in there with telomeres and you super concentrated the solution, the cells containing the telomere with certain nutrients, you might affect the length of that telomere, but the body simply doesn't work that way. I am concerned with the practical application of favorable biologic effects. You know, I'll use the term anti-aging at various points in this conversation, but let's realize there's no such thing as anti-aging. You cannot not chronologically age. I think we all get that. What we're talking about here is favorably affecting how we biologically age. So let's talk about why we age, and is there anything at all we can really do about it? So at least in the United States, we expect to live roughly 77 years or so on average. I mean, I know that this is not the best we can do, and again, depending on the statistics or who you listen to in the area of gerontology or aging, the oldest person on record lived to be 122 years old. So if that's your goal, you might change your lifestyle in some ways that may get you closer there. If you didn't have that goal, you might not change your lifestyle and you might live a shorter lifespan. My point here is shoot for the stars, change your life, make changes that are doable so that they don't steal the quality of your life away and you become neurotic about this. I've seen a lot of that as well. It's been suggested too by aging specialists that we're simply programmed to age to a certain number of years, and that's basically it over time. But even if, and I do believe there is some amount of truth in that we have a genetic time clock, so to speak, but like a clock on your wall, if you take care of it, if you change the batteries, if you just make sure it's in good working order, it could last quite a long time. But if that clock on the wall is, you know, on your deck or on your porch and is exposed to environmental elements, that clock will age more. But it started off with an inherent lifespan, so to speak. When the manufacturers make that clock, they say, well, this thing could last forever, meaning dozens of years, depending on how you take care of it. So yes, I agree. There is genetics in the background, but genetics are not everything. Genetics are influenced. They can be affected and are affected more or less in different people by various lifestyle measures. So I just described this, the gene determination of how we age. That's one theory. And a second theory is that, you know, over time our body, and particularly our genetic material known as our DNA, get damaged, and the cells simply no longer function properly because they're told what to do by our DNA. So those scientists that favor the DNA theory of aging believe that we last only as long as our DNA can manage small degenerative changes over time until they accumulate to bigger changes, and they simply add up to a huge amount of damage, too much for the cells to bear, and then we die. And again, I don't think it's important to argue if which theory is right here, because again, they are not mutually exclusive in terms of how they manifest in the body. That's why the blood detective approach is do the testing, have the conversations, get clear on the goals, develop a daily plan that is doable and works, that affects a variety of biochemical parameters, many of which can be tested and then retested to make sure your aging is better. So, for example, there is a urinary test known as MDA or malonyldialdehyde. Now, malonyldialdehyde is an accepted marker of cellular aging. If you measure this test and it's abnormal and you improve it with your natural health efforts, then there is a statistical advantage of less disease. And if you have less disease, your chances of dying prematurely from that disease are clearly less. So you may live longer. But MDA is just one of the biomarkers. You could have your telomere measured as well, and that might be another. But certainly these two are just part of many, each giving more and more indication, if you improve any abnormalities that you find, that your statistical chance of simply having better longevity is improved. So given that line of reasoning, I measure a variety of what are known as biomarkers, which is a fancy term for tests that tend to indicate how well a person's doing now. But very importantly, they have a correlation with disease risk and health and lifespan. So I will do testing of hormones. I will do testing of active hormones. I'll do testing of various toxins in the environment, like the levels of free metals that accumulate in our body, not just the total amount of metals. I will look at certain nutrient levels, most of which are not super accurate, by the way. You might want to listen to my show Vitamin Lies on PRN, all about the testing of nutrients, but some are important. For example, the lower your vitamin D, the increased risk that brings to higher morbidity and mortality. Quality of life reduces, quantity of life tends to reduce. Vitamin D is a very, very important practical biomarker, a lot more important, I think, than measuring a telomere. But you could measure all of those things. And then there are certain gene tests. Many of you know about the MTHFR gene. I measure this on many patients because it tells me about a process known as methylation. Too much methylation, not good. Too little methylation, you can't repair your DNA. So your DNA breaks down. That promotes oxidative stress in cells. If those cells, those cells can and often do influence hormonal levels. So you can see how I just combined this hormone decline theory of aging with the oxidation theory, which is equivalent to an inflammatory theory. And then we mentioned the telomeres as being affected by that. So it's obvious that these are not separate. So any approach at natural medicine or regular medicine to affect just one of these things with one biomarker, two, three, four, even half a dozen, is very much incomplete and misleading. So I measure over 50 different aspects of biochemistry, sometimes nearly 100, depending on the goal of the person that I'm seeing. And then whatever is abnormal there, we attempt to fix for the purpose of improving, again, quality of life, and we hope quantity of life. You know, any discussion of aging without mentioning a certain organelle, which is a term that describes tiny little organs in our cells, would be incomplete. So the most important organelle, which seems to be correlated with disease and aging, is the mitochondria. And for those of us that have taken biology classes as early as 6th grade, 8th grade, I remember learning about the mitochondria. They called it the powerhouse of the cell. And there's a very popular scientific hypothesis that proposes that mitochondrial DNA plays a major role in how we age. And interestingly, it turns out that the mitochondrial DNA develop mutations much faster than DNA in other parts of the cell. So therefore, any effort at serious, quote-unquote, anti-aging has to focus on reducing the damaged DNA potential in mitochondria, which is promoted through the reactive oxygen species sort of theory. So these free radicals or oxidants are these molecules that jump around in cells and destroy things, and they certainly destroy the mitochondrial DNA more than other types of cellular DNA. So if the oxidant theory has any validity, we would want to take antioxidants, wouldn't we? That sounds reasonable. Well, that may be true and it may not be true. Please listen to this statement very, very carefully. The term antioxidant is a misnomer, which means if you think that vitamin C, for example, vitamin E, selenium, glutathione, lipoic acid, resveratrol, and those are a few examples of the so-called antioxidants. If you think that when you consume those, either in foods or supplements, that they are guaranteed to work as antioxidants in your body, you are very, very mistaken. If an individual that you are putting in those so-called antioxidants in their body, if that body is unable to favorably biochemically manage the intake of the so-called antioxidant, those antioxidants may act as oxidants. Now, oxidants seem to have a very bad reputation, and they are certainly bad. I mean, I've just been describing how oxidants destroy DNA, and if you destroy DNA of the mitochondria, and the mitochondria is an organelle that ages a cell, whether it's a brain cell, a thyroid cell, a gut cell, a skin cell, a testicular cell, a breast cancer cell, you name it, then oxidants, that is, are bad. And yes, there are instances when oxidation is certainly bad. But oxidation is also required to break down and destroy old and dying and abnormal mutations and tissue changes. So there is a balance. How do you know? If I were to measure an oxidant in someone's blood work, for example, or their urine, and it's very high, how do I know if that's causing damage or if that's a favorable change to remove dead and old cells, which I just described? Well, the way to figure that out is by looking at a myriad of tests in context with the person's known symptoms, that means something. It doesn't mean as much as you think, however. Lots of people feel great and they're loaded with all sorts of biochemical abnormalities, and other individuals feel horrible and their chemistry is not that off. But context is everything. Testing must be considered in context to see whether someone's so-called antioxidant intake is translating to favorable physiologic changes. So I go through this concept because all we hear out there is antioxidants, take antioxidants. Many people I've tested, for example, I will measure vitamin C levels in the urine, but I also measure a degenerative form of vitamin C in the urine that might suggest that the individual is not metabolizing vitamin C well. So when they take all that vitamin C, whether it's from foods or supplements, they might actually be increasing oxidant damage. So that would be the bad form of oxidation by taking the vitamin C. Look, even Linus Pauling knew this. So this isn't a blood detective concept. Very little of what I'm saying today is original. If anything, I simply put the picture together from a practical perspective in a way that fits each person's needs. But these concepts have been figured out by a lot of different scientists and practitioners over time. But how do we take that work and bring it to you? One of the ways in making this practical is, again, at least if you're going to see a practitioner, is you should be asked to fill out detailed health questionnaires. Special questionnaires which tend to identify aging issues. Then a conversation takes place where a list of potential tests that will give practical advice that you can implement is determined. Then you embark on these lifestyle changes in your exercise, and not all exercise is the same, and in your diet, not all diet should be the same, and your exposure to the environment and or nutritional supplements, and you do these things for particular periods of time depending on which abnormal aging markers or biomarkers you've discovered, and then after that period of time you recheck them. So a person would say to me, you know, but I feel well, I came here for prevention, you identified these abnormalities, so how do I know if it's working, if, you know, I'm going to live longer? Well, no one can tell you for a fact you're going to live longer if you fix your biochemistry. But we know if your blood pressure is high and you lower it, your chances of dying of a stroke or a heart attack are statistically lowered. Therefore, you could live longer because you dodged a bullet, so to speak, by delaying the onset of disease. If you're overweight, we know that that increases risk of overall morbidity and mortality. So if you lose weight, that adds more percentage of security as you move forward. We know if your vitamin D level is on the higher side of normal, in the 70 to 75 range, you probably will reduce your risk of many diseases. If you have low levels of oxidative stress, they're not all over the place. If your C-reactive protein biomarker on blood is less than 1, that adds some statistical advantage. You know, the list going on and on. I'm going to mention something more very important as well. I've mentioned this throughout almost every show I've discussed, is the use of biomass testing or body composition, or what's known as bioimpedance. That is a technology that measures the metabolic rate in a person's body and also their percentage of muscle, water, fat, and the water in and outside of their cells. It does this with an electrical current. And we know that this test, listen up, this test, the body composition test, is probably the single most predictive non-blood test that if you favorably adjust your metabolic rate in context with the percentage of muscle, water, and fat in the body, you should experience less disease. Think of it this way. As we age, we atrophy. Our organs shrink. That's what happens with so-called normal aging. And by the way, almost no one is aging normally, in my opinion. But for argument's sake, we atrophy. Organs atrophy. That's our lean body mass. Organs control our chemistry. So if we have all these abnormal lab tests and we fix them beautifully, but we do not improve our lean body mass, we probably have not extended the quality of our life and therefore potentially our length of life. So I measure body composition on patients. Also bone density. I measure bone density using sonogram because the traditional DEXA bone densities expose a person to radiation. Yes, they say it's an allowable amount of radiation, and so it also is an allowable amount when you get on an airplane and you go through that the X-ray machine, and then there's a certain amount of medical X-ray exposure, and then there's a certain amount of X-ray exposure just walking around in life. And when you add all this up, it's just bad. And all of that radiation impacts our cells. Our cells try to compensate. They oxidize. They antioxidize. The level of hormones changes. Nutrition is moved around to try to repair. The different types of biomarkers I'm talking about look at a lot of the ways the body compensates in the aging process. And those of you whose bodies can compensate better tend to do much better. But let's face it, you know, growing old is a fact of life. There's no mistaking it. You know, we've got increased fatigue and weakened bones and all sorts of health issues, and not just one health issue. Many of us have what's known as disease clusters. We have 5-6 things going on at one time. But we know that as we age, the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease, dementia, cancers of a variety of types, cataracts, macular degeneration, just to name a few, increase exponentially. But we are making progress in slowing the development of these and other diseases down, so we simply age better. But fundamentally, and just to review here for a second, think of the aging process as an issue with the cells, because it can be traced down. Aging is traced down to the cellular level. And the accumulation of mistakes in cells, what are called mutations, and impairments in the DNA repair process, that is highly associated with the quality of our aging. And as I mentioned, most of us are prematurely aging. And that has to do with the amount of accumulated DNA damage. Some of you are thinking, well, I thought that had to do with oxidative stress or hormone decline or telomere shortening. Yes, that's all true, but they're not separate than this. As we age, we do not produce our stem cells as well. They do not proliferate as well. They do not work as well. Our mitochondrial function, again, that powerhouse of the cell, develops or accumulates more DNA damage. And when that happens in that given cell, and again, that cell could be a brain cell or a gut cell or a skin cell or you name it, that tissue ages differently. You know, an interesting concept to realize, and we all really know this when you think about it, is our body parts do not age the same. For example, traditional medicine is well aware that our kidneys age much faster than most other organs. So even when a person takes super good care of themselves, when they enter into their late 50s and 60s, usually in that area, there will be an increase in the biomarkers in blood testing and in urine that show the oxidative degenerative process, presumably due to accumulated DNA damage of the kidney nephrons. Those are the kidney cells. And as many of you know, the kidneys, like the liver and other detoxifying organs, fail to different extents. When it's a slow failure of the kidneys, they call that chronic renal failure, very, very common issue. And you'll show it, your doctor will mention it to you on your blood test or not, even though your tests are abnormal. But if you bring it up, he or she will say, well, yeah, we see that in people your age. And then you would say, can I do anything about it? And they would say, no. If your kidneys fail, then we get you in the hospital, we try to make you comfortable. There may be some way, depending on the cause or causes of the accelerated aging of the kidneys, that they could potentially work on. For example, hypertension, diabetes will age the kidneys. So if you have arthritis that's particularly bad in your right shoulder, for example, then you can conclude that your right shoulder is aging very, very differently and more rapidly than your left shoulder. So we all age differently overall, and then our various body parts age differently over the course of our lifetime. So part of the goal-setting process for improvements in biological age would be to really take a look at what it is you want to accomplish in your body and work on that nutritionally and do the appropriate testing and adjust lifestyle accordingly. There's no need, for the most part, to just hope for the best with your efforts. If your biomarkers are improving, that really does give some realistic expectation of improved aging. And for those of you who are thinking, well, I take all those supplements that you mentioned earlier, and I take many, many more, and I eat fantastically. I don't eat sugars and processed foods and white flours. I avoid GMO foods. I stay away from gluten. I found out my food allergies. I eliminate those. I exercise regularly. I sleep regularly. That's all great. But if that doesn't translate into improvement in the known biomarkers, then you're missing something. All of those things I just mentioned are probably very important for just about everyone, but they are very generalized. So, for example, if you do not methylate normally, I mentioned that term earlier. Again, it's just a fancy term for a type of process in the body that can be extremely anti-aging and helpful to repair, but over-methylation can be very, very damaging as well. But if you have that gene glitch, as one example, that process of methylation takes folic acid, you know, a B vitamin that you'll find in foliage, and it converts it into methylated folic acid, something known as L5-methyl tetrahydrofolate. Now, if you have that MTHFR gene of a certain type, you may not methylate folic acid well, no matter how much folic acid you eat and how many green juices you consume. So you can see how we are not what we eat, as I've said before. We are what we absorb from what we eat, but after we eat it, after we absorb it, there is another level, more important than the other two that we keep hearing for decades. It's how we activate and or metabolize the nutrition we take in. That's why there's such a discrepancy often between how much or the quality of what one consumes and whether or not that really translates into health. Look, I've had patients in the past that are yogi masters and meditators and very, very high-level spiritual people with throat cancer and liver cancer and all kinds of issues too. You can't think your way out of every disease or the aging process, although no one would argue, probably listening to this station, that stress reduction, meditation, practicing mindfulness, for example, is not an important contributor of overall quality of life. Of course it is. I'm simply saying, and please hear me here, I'm simply saying, don't put your eggs all in that basket. And also, I would say, personally, that it is a mistake to think that only foods and a clean food diet will maximize your health and you do not need nutritional supplements. I personally feel very strongly in the need for nutritional supplements. And if anyone out there is scientifically minded for what that's worth, there's plenty of evidence to prove that the use of nutritional supplements beyond a diet can affect a variety of healthcare processes in the body. So having said this, what should you take? What should you eat? Well, that's something that needs to be figured out on an individual basis. Start with the basic concepts. Yes, we want to eat foods lower down in the food chain. We probably want to eat closer to a vegetarian type lifestyle, but I've seen many people do that and they have caused nutritional issues because they assume it's healthier and they assume that they are eating in a balanced way. Remember, what you eat and what you absorb and what you metabolize are completely different things. So this is why it's important when a person says to me, Dr. Wald, what do you think the best way to eat is? Can you see how odd of a question that is? Because there is no best way. There is a trial and error process of finding out what your body likes. So you measure the biomarkers, you look at your quality of life, you take aging assessment questionnaires, which have been correlated with disease risk and quality and length of life, and then you have your answer. I would like to spend just a few minutes right now, though, commenting on some testing, which I think is just a waste of time. You know, I had an individual I just saw yesterday in my office, which is in Mount Kisco in Westchester, New York, about an hour from New York City, who presented with a stack of tests. And as soon as I saw the tests on top, I thought, oh no, these are those colorful profiles where the patient pays out of pocket for these tests that have very little to no practical application other than confusing everyone. Here's a few examples. Salivary cortisol DHEA levels. Yes, I recognize the importance of cortisol and DHEA sulfate and their ratios for health. It's well established. It's just that the saliva tests, I'm promising you, are not reliable. If you want to figure it out yourself, what you do is you give a saliva sample, or two of them, you put a different name on them, send those into the lab, you're going to get different results. Now, from years of doing these tests and finally concluding that I could guess based on just speaking to someone what their levels are for the most part, that these tests have no real practical value. Almost everyone needs adrenal support, in my opinion. Do I need a test to tell me that? So not necessarily. There are tests of, here's another example, of measuring amino acids. Now, of course, amino acids, the components of proteins, are very important for practically every reparative process in the body. All tissues require protein for repair. The immune system requires proteins, many amino acids, which again, proteins are derived, the amino acids derived from the proteins have antioxidant effects, they have detoxifying effects. So clearly, protein is important. So why wouldn't we want a test that can tell us all the individual deficiencies or excesses of amino acids and then try to correct that? Well, we probably should, but not first. To spend $200 to $400 to $500 to $600 on that test when there is a free test in the blood called total protein. If your total protein is low or low normal, then you clean up the protein in the diet, which, by the way, might not be so straightforward. A person may be protein deficient because they're not absorbing their protein. So if your total protein is low or low normal on your blood work, or isn't in the high end of normal, so there's an optimal place, you may have an absorption issue. Maybe it's pancreatic enzyme deficiencies. Maybe it's stomach acid deficiencies. Maybe your chronic health problems increase your use of protein so much that you don't have an absorption problem or a utilization problem. You just have an increased need problem that you didn't meet, so your blood level is low. My point here is, first you fix the diet and you try to recover the total protein on blood. If you cannot do that, and or if you do that and you're still not as well, then maybe you spend extra dough on figuring out the individual amino acids, which if you're low in total protein to begin with, what do you think your individual amino acid test will show? They will show that they're low. So do you need to spend several hundred dollars to figure that out? No. So it's a waste of money to do that test. Same with fatty acid testing. I see these colorful printouts from these labs. One of them starts with an M. And the problem is, I've done a lot of these tests in the past, and pretty much people need many more omega-3s and very little omega-6s. Everyone's got some abnormalities on these tests. Since I've learned that, I don't bother doing that test. I just make sure that people get their fatty acids, and depending on their health issues, they may need the fatty acid EPA, DHA, or they may need more EPA, or they may need more DHA. And if I give them that, since these fatty acids can potentially help repair cells, I do the tests which show that the repair process is happening or not. So there's a lot of not so great testing. I stick with the ones that have the greatest evidence base. But as a quick list of just some of the more important biomarkers that I use is a measurement, as I said, of the lean body mass, the muscle in the body and on the body, not just the muscle that you see. The assessment of strength, grip strength, for example, is correlated with quality of aging. If you have weak grip strength, you may have weak heart function, for example. That's not guaranteed, but it is a fact that often correlates. Measurement of the metabolic rate and the body fat percentage and one's aerobic capacity and their blood pressure and their insulin sensitivity, which can be measured not just indirectly with a hemoglobin A1C test, but also by something called C-peptide. And then there is the cholesterol HDL ratio. That's one simple biomarker. But I use a lab that measures over 20 different types of cardiovascular risk markers. And since one of the leading causes of death in men and women is cardiovascular, anyone interested in anti-aging or favorable biological aging really must have the appropriate lipid and cardiovascular biomarkers measured. Now, if you have, for example, a normal LDL, that's like the bad cholesterol, they say, but you measure it along with an oxidant test and the oxidant result is very high, that means in a sense that the LDL is a bit cooked, like a fried egg. That's not good. If your LDL is normal, on the other hand, like it was in the other scenario I just mentioned, but your oxidant marker is very low, then you probably do not have an abundance of oxidized LDL. So that was an example of a normal test in both cases that is interpreted in the context with other testing to determine whether or not someone has an accelerated risk of cardiovascular disease. And if they do have high levels of oxidants that oxidize their LDL, which is bad, their other cells in the body might also be over-oxidized. So that's why I check tests in the area of endocrinology and gastroenterology and neurology, infectious disease, immunity, you name it, to look at the entire body. And then I started to speak about the bone density earlier. Loss of bone density is generally an inflammatory condition. It is almost never caused by lack of calcium. In fact, excessive calcium tends to cause bone loss due to hormonal, what's called negative feedback. The bone is made of a protein structure, so protein issues that might cause a dissolving of the protein matrix and loss of calcium from the bone and other minerals. You know, there's boron and strontium and folic acid. These aren't all minerals or vitamins as well, and other elements. There's a lot in bones that are lost when they break down. And the breakdown, I'm trying to point out, can be caused by problems with your blood pH, not your saliva and urine. Your blood pH, another important biomarker, may have to do with microcirculation to the bone. Think about that, microcirculation. If you don't get enough circulation to the bone, how do you deliver nutrition? And the bone breaks down. Chronic inflammatory issues. So the other biomarkers I measure among many include inflammatory mediators like tumor necrosis factor. And C-reactive protein is another important inflammatory marker, but there are two types. There is regular C-reactive protein, or CRP, and there's cardio-CRP. I prefer, for the assessment of biological aging purposes and as a biomarker, to measure the cardio-CRP. And as the name implies, the cardio portion, clearly it has a predictive value for cardiovascular issues, but it is not specific for that. And then I mentioned earlier malonyldialdehyde. I mentioned tumor necrosis factor alpha. I mentioned the oxidized form of vitamin C, which is called dehydroascorbate. There is a blood test known as serum ferritin. Now, ferritin is a storage form of iron. It is iron bound to protein, and that binding molecule is known as ferritin. Now, elevated levels of ferritin can mean a couple of things. It's a general aging marker of oxidative stress, but also potentially inflammation. But another cause of increased ferritin might be from one of two conditions of iron accumulation, hemosiderosis or hemochromatosis. Once iron accumulation has been ruled out, if ferritin values are still elevated, it's likely due to inflammation and not iron accumulation. Any effective anti-aging or healthy aging attempt should result in a dramatic reduction of ferritin. There's a similar molecule and a biomarker that I use very commonly for healthy aging and disease risk is called ceruloplasmin. And ceruloplasmin, basically speaking, is a long-term storage form test for copper. Now, metals such as copper and also iron, I spoke about that when I just mentioned ferritin, those are potential oxidants. You know, I had a patient who was iron anemic, and we corrected a number of things, including suggesting a certain form of very favorable, easy on the body form of iron. And I saw this person a few months after I made these recommendations, and we were reviewing what she had done. And I said, "So have you been taking the iron?" She says, "No, Dr. Walda, I read that iron can cause cancer and cardiovascular disease." And I said, "Well, that's potentially true if it's an excess, but you were deficient." So I actually, this is an obvious example of a misunderstanding. People read things on the internet, and then they misapply them, or they apply them in these compartmentalized ways when the compartmentalized interpretation may be very, very different from what a person needs overall. So for example, if someone is malabsorbing, if someone's iron levels or ferritin levels are low in their body, you wouldn't necessarily just throw iron at them. They might have low or no stomach acid, conditions known as hypochlorhydria or low, or achlorhydria, no stomach gas, and therefore they will not activate and or absorb iron normally, and to throw iron into them can lead to a toxic situation. There's also copper-induced iron deficiency anemia, where there's so much copper that it offsets iron utilization and creates an anemia, which is basically a deficiency. And a deficiency or excess or imbalance of any number of nutrients, whether they're vitamins, minerals, herbs, protein, fats, or carbs, can throw off other things. Now, I know this sounds complicated, but really, with a very thorough biological aging plan, initially it's a little more complex, I will admit that, to figure out what a person needs. You have to do these tests. It takes a few weeks to receive them back and to know what needs to be done, but then it gets a lot easier. Now, I should also mention the importance of exercise in longevity and biological age. There is very little doubt that the right forms and intensities of exercise applied the right way to an individual in the context of a so-called balanced diet can go a long way towards improving quality of life and length of life. So we know that exercise may improve cardiovascular function, circulation of blood, lymphatic circulation, cerebral spinal fluid circulation, muscle strength, body composition, and fat loss, and reducing cholesterol and helping blood pressure. The list go on and on. But most people that I sit with, when I say, oh yes, we need to talk about exercise, they'll start rattling off their exercise without thinking for a moment that the type of exercise they're doing may be just off for what their health issues are or their health goals, and or they're not monitoring their heart rate, so they're losing a lot of potential value in their workouts. I design workout plans as a double certified sports nutritionist as well to match a person's overall needs. So if someone has health concerns, think of you and your health problems if you have them. And let's say we were able to figure out everything you need dietarily and nutritional supplement-wise and lifestyle-wise to compensate. But then you decide that you're going to exercise, run a marathon, run a 5K, or work out in the gym 3, 4, 5 times a week. That's great. It's just that that added stress upon the body increases your nutritional needs to such an extent that it borrows from the nutrition for all the other areas that we figured out. So it's very important, if not, it's essential, actually, to review with someone like myself all of your lifestyle when figuring out what your nutritional needs are. These are not separate, but most people do not connect them whatsoever. And many healthcare providers fail to do that. Even in the natural field, I would expect this in the traditional medical field. And I don't mean that as a rude criticism. I just mean it as a fact. The medical system, the allopathic system, is, in my opinion, not a healthcare system at all. It is a disease care system at best. Meaning that the diagnosis of disease is given a lot of importance, and then the treatments, which are generally drug or surgical procedures, when a lot of these circumstances can be avoided. But there is very little health taught in medical schools. I went to medical school. I can tell you there's very little taught. I attended chiropractic college. There is a ton of health concepts discovered and nutritional concepts, but I felt it was incomplete. I got my master's degree in nutrition, and that certainly filled in lots of gaps. 26 years of doing this fills in other gaps. I became a dietitian, a certified nutrition specialist, a certified clinical nutritionist, a sports nutritionist. I have 2 board certifications in nutrition. I will not stop learning because there is something to be gained from all of these so-called separate areas. When people say to me, why do you do all this stuff and why do you get all these certifications and degrees? I do it simply because that's where the knowledge is. I could care less about the degrees. There are degrees that I've had that I've let lapse, and there are degrees that I keep. The point is the information. And also the benefit that I feel I've experienced by going to medical school and chiropractic school and nutrition school and sports courses and living this is a very, very well-rounded perspective on things. Knowing when medicine is the right choice, knowing when a combination of medicine and natural medicine is the best choice, or when nutrition is the best choice, bringing that to people that trust me so they can make fully informed and balanced decisions for them. Let me give you an example of how nutrition can impact aging overall. So there was a study regarding nutritional supplements in the American Journal of Cardiology, and this was in 2008, but many similar studies have been done ever since then. And they were looking at what they termed decreases in whole body mass, which can cause something called sarcopenia, which basically is an overall degenerative atrophy, which is characteristic of growing older. And many of us have various degrees of this. And the degree of sarcopenia degeneration is associated directly with the fragility of a person, their disability, you know, how they age, the progression of several different diseases. So what the study simply did was it just gave them a bunch of oral amino acids, specific types, and this was a randomized, what's called an open-label crossover study. They used 41 elderly subjects between the ages of 66 and 84 with sarcopenia. And the short and long of it is that the amino acid supplementation, that one simple thing, amino acids, cause a reduction in a number of the inflammatory mediators that I've been mentioning throughout the show, influence growth hormone levels in a positive way, the lean body mass in most of the subjects improved, and we know that when lean body mass improves, that insulin resistance decreases, which further helps things like reducing cholesterol levels and blood pressure and, of course, blood sugar. The reason I mention this is because this was just a non-specific way, just giving a bunch of amino acids, and this made a difference statistically in the quality of the aging individual's life and offset known degenerative issues. If this is accomplished with very little work, imagine what can be accomplished by figuring out someone's biochemical needs in many areas other than just amino acids. And by the way, it's the amino acid leucine, which seemed to be the pivotal amino acid overall for increasing lean body mass. Now remember, an increase in lean body mass tends to fix many issues in the body. The greater and more favorably you can improve your lean organ or body mass, generally speaking, the longer your lifespan, because you offset the advent of chronic degenerative diseases, and the better your quality of life. So again, I do body composition, sonogram bone density. I check the autonomic nervous system. That I haven't mentioned yet. That's a simple, non-invasive way of objectively measuring the fitness, so to speak, of the nervous system. And then certain natural measures are made, and then we recheck the test against the other tests, and we say, well, how do all these things looking? All of those inflammatory mediators, tests of absorption and malabsorption. I did an entire show on PRN regarding malabsorptive disorders. I check most of those on every single patient, because if you malabsorb, it doesn't matter if you take all the nutrition correctly. It also doesn't matter if you're taking the most high-quality supplements and cleanest foods ever on the planet. If you're not absorbing them, things don't work. So I find it sad that many individuals are doing the right thing. They're very intelligent. They've adjusted their lives. They're eating right. They're exercising right, taking the right supplements, but they have failed to have the appropriate tests of absorption or malabsorption performed. Then your nutrition has to focus on that. So if you have a certain constellation of malabsorption findings, you need whatever nutrition it takes for those. And that nutrition may be very different than the so-called anti-aging nutrients. Remember, you're not a textbook. As a blood detective, it's my job to write the book on every patient. When I do blood work, I have a software program which I call, guess, what do you think I call it? I call it the Blood Detective Program, and it interprets blood medically and nutritionally, and it compares your results of your blood tests, not just to average men or women your age, which is what your doctors do, and that is valuable, and of course I do that, but it's also a comparison of how you compare to tighter ranges of normal where functionality may be more optimal. For example, a cholesterol range of 0 to 200 is considered normal, But no one would argue that someone with a 199 cholesterol has a greater cardiovascular risk than someone with a 160. And according to my research, between 160 and 170 is the best place to be for overall cardiovascular risk. But not if your C-reactive protein is high, or your ferritin is high, or your tumor necrosis factor is high, or your homocysteine is high. That's another biomarker that I have not mentioned in the show yet. So again, we look at everything in context. We look at the whole map. We don't just look at a single road to figure out a doable plan. And finally, any discussion on biological aging and mitigating disease risk and improving quality of life would be astoundingly incomplete if we don't at least mention the role of stress upon the body and mental well-being. There are a myriad of ways where a person can reduce their stress, and we will have an entire show exploring those. But needless to say that stress kills. It kills by affecting your cells and your organs, causing them to age more rapidly. Depending on the organs that age more rapidly, you might have Alzheimer's or dementia, which affects a certain area of the brain known as the substantia nigra. Or if your blood vessels are aging more rapidly due to stress, that would be arterial sclerosis or atherosclerosis and circulation issues. Or your stress could cause a very real physical hole in your stomach known as an ulcer. So we all know that stress affects the body. It affects the body in different ways. But Dr. Hans Selye in the 50s, he's the one who came up with the term stress. Stress was a term used in construction for forces, you know, stress forces on structures, and applied it to the body. And because of that new term, he did not get much attention for quite a long time. But eventually it was recognized his brilliance in identifying the three stages of this, of sort of stress adaptation, namely the alarm phase of stress, the adaptation phase, and exhaustion. With any physical, mental, emotional stress, there should be an adaptation phase where our blood pressure increases and circulation compensates and digestion slows if we need to run away from a danger, so to speak, or deal with a stressful situation. And that's all appropriate for a relatively short period of time. If that stress continues, or the stress may not continue, but if the body perceives the stress has continued, there's degeneration. The alarm phase, which I just described, moves into the adaptation phase, but after a while, it goes into the exhaustion phase. And that's when people tend to get symptoms and diagnose diseases. But long before then is when the damage happens. The blood detective way tries and makes an attempt, a serious attempt, to assess the damage before it's obvious. So for those people who say, well, I feel well, or for those people who say, well, I really don't know what's wrong. I don't want to know what's wrong. I don't want to hear it. Or they say, well, how can it be that these things are wrong with me or possibly wrong? I feel so good. Again, how you feel and what's going on are two different things. Personally, I would rather know what's there so I can make steps and manage my life and longevity. So that will conclude this discussion on anti-aging today. It's only a little smidgen of what there is to know. But the long and short of it is possible to reduce and improve biological aging. There's nothing you can do about your chronological age in terms of years, but plenty you can do about the quality of your aging. I hope that you all join me for the next show on Ask the Blood Detective about breast cancer, the causes of breast cancer, and what you can do through lifestyle, nutritional supplementation, and diet, and testing to offset breast cancer development, to deal with breast cancer once you may have it, and to help prevent recurrence and offset side effects of chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. My name is Dr. Michael Wald. Thank you for joining me today on Ask the Blood Detective. Please send me your questions so I can post them on my blog and your radio show ideas. Go to www.integratednutritionny.com or www.blooddetective.com. My email is info@blooddetective.com or info@integratednutritionny.com. The number at my office, for those of you who may want to work with me as a patient and practitioner, is 914-242-8844. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll speak to you soon. Come out, Virginia. Don't let me wait. You got the liquor, start.
much too late. All the sooner or later.